Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, you have reached American Health Crisis through Blog Talk Radio. This is Paulette Young, your host, along with Selena Lindsay. And our speaker today is going to be Barbara Coloroso. And the topic is going to be parenting with wisdom. Anyone wanting to call into the actual podcast is 858-769-4936. Press 1. When you press 1 and you have questions or you want to join in the conversation, you can. I want to read this a quote by Barbara Coloroso. Because they are children, and for no other reason, they have dignity and worth simply because they are. Barbara Coloroso is known internationally as a speaker, author of 5 books in the area of parenting, teacher, educator, school discipline, nonviolent conflict resolution, and reconciliation. She is an educational consultant for school districts, medical and business community, and the criminal justice system. So anyone wanting to join in the conversation, you're welcome too. But you have to press 1 in order for us to hear you. And tonight, Barbara, I wanted to mention also, Barbara Coloroso will be a presenter at the Fathers and Family International Conference, March 8th through the 11th. And I've also put her website information up on the screen, so you can always you can Google her name, and it'll come up. Anyway, this is Paulette Young speaking, and Barbara, go ahead, take the reins.
Welcome, and thank you, Paulette, for having me talking about parenting with wit and wisdom. And boy, don't we need it in this crazy time we are in right now. My goal as a parent and now a grandparent and an educator is to help raise a generation of young people who know how to think, not just what to think, who are willing to stand up for values and against injustices, who are not easily led, who don't do the please, who have what Carl Sagan said all three-year-olds have, the gift of skepticism and wonder, the wow and the why. And I want your 16-year-olds, if you've raised them to be these kinds of people, to have that wow and why of life. When their friends say, let's go vandalize that building, I want your kids saying, why on earth would I do that? And all the things they look at in life and going, wow, 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 wow. And how do we go about doing that? And how do we honor their dignity and worth, as you spoke about, Paulette, at the very beginning? And I want to raise that generation so that when the high-status social bully, no matter what age, and bullying can start as young as 4.5 and 5, but if they're in middle school or high school, and the high-status social bully says, I don't like the new girl. You want to be in my group? Don't eat lunch with her. I want your daughter to be the one to say, that's mean, and have the courage, and it takes courage to go sit next to the new girl. And your young son in the locker room, when the high-status social bully says, oh, look at that other boy over there, different skin color, religion, or gender, or physical, or mental ability. The big 5 for hate crimes. What makes a hate crime different than any other crime? It's criminal bullying. Let's go mess him up. I want your son to have the strength, conviction, and courage to be willing to say no. When his friends say, what are you, chicken? What are you, just like him? But where does that start? Very, very young, with something very, very simple. Called red pajama, blue pajama. Now, I have 3 kids. They're all grown now, and I have 3 wonderful grandchildren. My 3 kids, Anna Marie and Joe, when they were little, they didn't get to make all of their own decisions. I didn't say to them, do you want to go to bed or not? That's not a decision a 2-year-old gets to make. But I did say, do you want to go to bed now with your red pajamas or now with your blue pajamas? And one of them shows up with red bottoms, blue top. And I've always said, if it's not life-threatening, morally threatening, or unhealthy, let it go. Allow them to experience the consequences of their own choices. And there's nothing wrong with wearing red bottoms, blue top, unless you're such a stickler that they have to wear what you told them to. But I want to teach kids you have agency in your life, that you can think for yourself within limits and boundaries. So age-appropriate, ability-appropriate choices and decisions that you let your young people make. So you advance from red pajama, blue pajama, to here's three outfits, pick one. Now, our son Joe is an artist, and he used to pick out the most fascinating three outfits, pick one. So out of absolute desperation, I made him a large button for preschool that said, I dress myself. And he proudly wore that thing to preschool every day. But then you increase it again. Here's your school clothes, here's your play clothes, pick something from your school. And regularly our middle daughter would show up with a layered look. All school clothes, definitely layered. Now, I know a lot of parents who would say, go pick out an outfit and then stand there. You can't wear that one. Now, it's not life-threatening to kids, painful to parents, but it's not life-threatening to wear the layered look. You let them go. It's like kids with shoes on the wrong feet. If they hurt, they'd move them. But we worry, worry, worry. You know, I've yet to see a senior with shoes on the wrong feet. But we sure spend an awful lot of their early childhood worrying about it. No, you let them go. My oldest, who's in her late 40s now, when she was in high school, it was, here's your school clothes. Here, pick out your clothes for school. Because she knew how to pick out things that were appropriate. But I can't tell you how many middle school parents have come up to me and said, would you look at this kid? He was such a good kid. He was so well-behaved, so well-mannered, so well-dressed. Now look at him. And I look at that kid and I get to know his parents and say, you know what? He hasn't changed. They go, what? They haven't changed. From the time he was little, you dressed the way you told him to dress. He acted the way you told him to act. He said the things you told him to say. He's been listening to somebody else tell him what to do. Problem is, it isn't you anymore. It's his peers. The kid hasn't learned how to think. So I'd like you to take a serious look in all areas of their lives at what choices and decisions can they make that are age-appropriate and ability-appropriate. Because our goal is that when they leave our homes and our schools, they're making all of their own decisions and truly responsible for all of their own behavior. We have to make that happen. Now, looking at those, I got in a lot of trouble. I'm also an educator. I refuse to tell upper elementary kids in Colorado to put their coat and mittens on. And we have very cold falls and springs. And I would say, why do you wear your coat and mittens? And they'd raise their hand because your mother said so. I said, no. One little boy said, because my mom's cold. I thought he was pretty close to the truth. And another said, oh, I know, because you catch pneumonia. And I said, that's not true. If there's any educators listening, I'll bet you have seen kids who never bundle up, who much to your dismay are never absent. They don't ever get sick. You breathe on them with strep. They still don't get sick. And then there's other kids whose parents wrap them up, bundle them up, warm them up, drive them directly to school, send a note, don't let them go out, it's too cold. They have pneumonia half the winter. That's not why. I teach them why. I hold up a hunk of frozen meat. I say, kids, look at this meat. It doesn't move, does it? It's kind of cold, isn't it? Now, feel your bodies. They're kind of warm, aren't they? Feel that heart. It's moving, isn't it? Now, you go on outside with the coat all buttoned up. All the warm air stays in. And there is a very good chance your heart will keep moving. But should you go out with it wide open or worse yet, no coat at all, there is a possibility. All the warm air could go out. The cold air could come in. Your organs will freeze. Heart, kidney, liver, solid, just like this hunk of meat. And the kids are going, wow. And I said, but don't worry. Your body takes care of itself. It draws from parts it can live without. Your hands will go first. And I show them white dots and dark fingers and no fingers from frostbite. And the kids are going, yuck. I said, but that's why you wear mittens. Most kids leaving my classroom were making a decision on a regular basis not to let their organs freeze. Now, you want to see how ingrained that is in our culture? I'll bet some of you, the last time you went home to visit your parents, now that you're a responsible adult, your mom says, don't forget to bundle up. Or your dad will say, do you think you have your kid bundled enough? Think for yourself. But the underlying message is you better listen to me. It's important that we let our young people learn at a very young age that they can make choices and decisions, and yes, they can make mistakes, and yes, they will be held accountable. We'll talk about that a bit later. But my goal is to build self-discipline and a sense that I matter, that I have agency, I can think for myself. So they're not easily led. They don't do the please. And today I've got to say, in a true democracy, it is critical that we as citizens know how to think, that we think for ourselves. We know how to look at issues and make our own decisions and not be easily led or due to please. The next thing we want to look at is, where are you coming from philosophically as a parent? Now, all of us have a parenting toolbox, compliments of the parents who raised us, the community we grew up in, and the culture we grew up in. Some of you grew up in very vital, functioning, healthy families. You're so lucky. You reach into that toolbox for a hammer, you pull out a hammer, and it serves you well. But the rest of us, who came from less than vital, functioning, healthy families, we reach in for a hammer, we pull out a hatchet. We make a mess of whatever we're trying to do. And so we start running to parenting workshops, and we read parenting books, and we take a technique from here and a technique from here. If it's in a book, it's got to be right. And if an expert from afar, that's anybody over 100 miles, so I qualify, comes in and says it'll work, then it'll work. Wrong. You have to take anybody else's techniques. Today you have to take mine and bounce them off your own philosophical tenets. And if it won't bounce, I don't care who said it, what kind of research is behind it, don't use it. There's a lot of crazy stuff out there in parenting today that you and I have to challenge. And we have to look at and say, where am I coming from philosophically? And does it fit with that? Are there some parenting tools gave me that are not serving me well, that I do not want to give to my children for their toolbox? And what ones did our parents give us that we can keep? Our grandparents, our aunts, our uncles, people in the neighborhood who we called aunt and uncle, who weren't even biologically related to us, but they gave us some wisdom too. So we need to look at our own toolbox. Now, I have three basic tenets. I'll bounce anybody's techniques off of. You don't have to have the same. You just have something to say, this is where I'm coming from. And my tenets are, kids are worth it. Number one, kids are worth it. And I know you've got to believe that, because I know you're not in parenting for the money, that's for sure. But we have to believe that they're worth it. Number two, won't treat them in a way I myself would not want to be treated. Not how I was treated, but I don't want to treat them in a way I would not want to be treated. And if I wouldn't want it done to me, why on earth would I do it to a child? And three, if it works, it must leave my dignity and my child's dignity intact. Not does it appear to work, but does it work and leave both of our parties' dignity intact? So let's look at that. Number one, kids are worth it. Do we first individually, as a family, as a community, as a nation, as a global community, make a commitment to children? A Lebanese citizen, so sick and tired of the bombing in his own community of Beirut, said, we will have peace only if we begin to love our children more than we hate our enemies. Are we committed to children? Are we committed to our neighbor's children? When you hear your neighbor screaming at her child, obviously frustrated and worn out, you just talk to the other neighbor and say, boy, has she lost it? Or can you say, hey, your windows are open. Sounds like you're having one heck of a day. Why don't you come on all down and we'll all take a break? And why can't we, as people who have raised our children, go to a grocery store and see somebody really struggling with three little ones? I had three in 3.5 years. I get it. Can we be willing to say to them, been there, done that. Can I help you out in any way? And oftentimes they'll melt and say, yes. Here, let him pick a cereal. And I say to little ones, by the way, when they get to pick a cereal, I say, you can have any cereal in this entire aisle where the first ingredient is not sugar, S-U-G-A-R. And they're looking and looking and looking. Oh, no, that won't work, that won't work, that won't work. We're talking 3.5, 4-year-olds. They can identify the letters. And then they find one, and they're so excited to find oatmeal because the first ingredient is not sugar. But you've let them make decisions, and most importantly, you've given somebody a break. And can you, who have little ones, say to a parent of a teenager, you want to swap kids for a night? You know, just to give one another a little different levity and a little bit of a break. And kids are worth it. Now, every kid, as a teacher, I didn't care where a kid came from. Dad's an alcoholic. Mother has an interesting occupation. Brother's been in jail. Any kid walking through that door is a kid. And every kid needs these messages every day at home, school, and in the community. I believe in you. I trust in you. I know you can handle this. You're listened to. You're cared for. You're very important to me. Children need to hear that in lots of different ways every single day. But do you truly listen to your child when they come home from school? You're busy on the computer or you're busy on your phone. And you say, how was your day? And he goes, fine. And his voice drops, his body drops. And we don't respond. We missed it, totally. He's not fine. We need to tune in to our kids. Now remember, we and they speak five ways. Our bodies, our face, our eyes, our tone of voice. And what we actually say, only 20% of what you and I communicate to kids is done with words. The other 80% is what our body's doing when those words are being spoken or not spoken. It's like that little third grade boy had a teacher who didn't like third grade boys. Kid nailed on and said, you don't like third grade boys. Teacher looked down and said, that's not true. I like third grade boys. The little kid looked back up and said, would you tell your face that then? Because what the face was speaking was not what her voice was speaking. Kids can see that. If you say to the child, you know, oh, it's going to be all right, and you look sad and you look shaky and anxious, they get the message. They're reading what's really happening. So they need to know that we believe in them, trust them, and know they can handle life's adventures and chaos. So kids are worth it. The second, won't treat them in a way I myself would not want to be treated. Now, this is where we can fall down as parents because we've been taught to use bribes and threats and rewards and punishments. And Alfie Cohn said it so beautifully. He said, bribes and threats are the flip side of the same coin. They don't buy us much. But I also think they bankrupt the spirit of our children because now they're saying, what's in it for me? What are you going to give me if I do that? Praise-dependent, reward-dependent children will not be the ones to stand up and speak out for their classmates, to step in when there's an injustice, because they're going to wonder what's in it for me, and there isn't anything in it when you stand up and speak out except your sense of dignity and self-worth because you made a difference in somebody's life. But look at all those bribes and threats that we use. And you know, a bribe is just a pleasant threat. If you eat everything on your plate, you can have dessert. It's just a nice way of saying if you don't eat it, you don't get dessert. And it also says what's on your plate so bad we have to bribe you to eat it. Now think about that. You say, but wait a minute. How am I going to get him to eat his food? What I suggest you do is you put the dessert right on the plate. And if you're going to raise this next generation to be healthier than you and I are, then it will be fruit most of the time. So if they eat the fruit before or after or with their mashed potatoes, does it matter? And then if you do that most of the time and sweets are just something extra and special instead of norm, they will often take the icing off a cupcake because it'll be too sweet for them. There are places all over the world who don't have so much sugar. And kids will try a cupcake and they'll go, oh, it's too sweet, and they'll take the icing off. Yes, you don't bribe them to eat everything on their plate. You don't make them finish their plate if they're full. And what I've always used with little ones, the Tupperware. I have no investment in Tupperware. But Tupperware is a wonderful bowl, and there's more out from different brands today that divide the food so Mr. Potato doesn't touch Miss Corn because some kids can't handle that. And you put it in that plate, and when the child says, I'm full, they put the lid on the plate, and they put it in the refrigerator. If they get hungry before their next meal, they can eat what's in that plate first. Now, you don't let it grow, and it's not served for breakfast the next day. But it's saying to them, listen to your own body when it says full, full. And they know that there's a routine in the house that I can eat what's on that plate first before I look for anything else to eat. Now, there are growing kids when their metabolism has changed dramatically. well, they'll eat everything on that plate and get what's out of the refrigerator, eat it, and still be hungry. And that means you need to let them have a lot of food during the day. But if you don't have a lot of sweet food, they'll fill up on the good stuff. It's just having that good stuff around. And getting them involved in making their own foods and the like is really helpful. But there are a lot of ways we bribe our kids. We use abundant praise. Oh, you're such a good big brother. When that one was just trying to figure out how to get his baby brother back where he came from. Or you just complimented him and, oh, you're such a good big brother, when he had just taken a toy away, but you didn't see it. Abundant praise, tangible goodies. If you do this, I'll give you that. And then our presence as a reward. If you're well-behaved at church, or if you're well-behaved when you were over at Aunt Lucy's, then I'll take you to the park. My presence is a reward. So what do you do instead? You know, I don't want to take something away from you that you've used, but I want to assure you that bribes and the flip side of that, threats and rewards and punishments, which are also the flip side of a coin, don't serve our children well. And when they grow older don't care for those rewards, what are you going to do? Or if they say, I don't need that, and I'm not going to do my chore, I don't need it, Grandma gave me $10 kind of thing. So what are you going to do? So let me give you an alternative to abundant praise, tangible goodies, and our presence as a reward. What our young people need is our encouragement, feedback, a sense of deep caring, and discipline. Encouragement. Praise can only occur at the end of a deed done the way you want it done. It's highly judgmental. But encouragement can occur anytime. And what's encouragement? Any one of those six critical life messages. A little kid falls flat on his face. How do you praise him? You fell well? No. You say, come on, buddy, pick yourself up. You can do it. The five-year-old makes it down the hill. Now think about this. You say, okay, if you make it down the hill, we're going to go to Dairy Queen. And his training wheels touch. He's going to do one of three things. He's going to lie. Oh, they didn't touch. They didn't touch. He's going to throw his bike down and say, I don't need Dairy Queen anyway. Or a resilient child's going to pick themselves up and try again. A praise-dependent kid is less likely to do that last one. No, but a kid you've let make choices and decisions and mistakes, say, come on, buddy, I know you can do it. Pick yourself up. Try it again. That 16-year-old makes it around the parking lot without popping the clutch. You did it. You did it. They need that kind of encouragement. Now
I want to say
feedback?
Something.
Yes,
I know you said,
sure.
Barbara, you said about encouraging. Okay, tell me if this is okay, not so okay. Because my little three-year-old grandchild, I wanted her to taste my black eyed peas, homemade. And the way I did it was, and I maybe that's more bribing, but I told her, I said, it'll make you strong. Your eyes will continue to look so beautiful. And so just saying strong and how it's going to make her look and feel made her taste it. I'm not sure if that was the right approach.
Is it a lie?
And she loved it. What?
Is it a lie? Did you tell her a lie?
No,
because
it will make her
strong. You said it's going to make you strong. It will make her strong. It'll make her skin healthy. It'll do all these things.
Yeah.
That's not a lie. And so that's
not
even a bribe. You didn't say if you don't eat it, you get grandma's reward. You didn't say if you eat it, grandma will give you dessert. See, you said what you do, and you follow the basic formula. What you do in terms of feedback is you give a child a compliment. Now, a compliment is not, oh, I'm so proud of you, you ate it all, you're going to be strong and beautiful. You didn't do any of that. You didn't go on and on and on about it. But you could say, if you eat these beans, they will make you strong. And let's look at what praise would be. Thank you for eating those beans up. Grandma spent a lot of time and a lot of love making those for you so you could be strong and beautiful. Do you see? Mm-hmm. You stroke the deed, not the kid.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't say, oh, you're such a good girl eating up so well. No. Instruct the deed, not the kid. Be very specific to the deed. And let the child know what his or her actions did for grandma, for a cat, a dog. Let's say you say to your granddaughter, thank you for walking the dog. He's been inside all day, and look how happy he is to be outside. Thank you for watering that plant. It was so wilted, now it's standing strong. Thank you for inviting the little girl in the block who's new over to play on your swing, because I know you love your swing. And look how happy she is to be on it. You stroke the deed, not the kid. Be very specific to what the child has done. And you let them know how that affected grandma, the plant, the animal, or the new girl. Kids need to know that what they do matters. And so you can get excited. Can you ever get excited just to get excited? Oh, yes. But praise the panic,
okay,
kids can't get excited.
I'm not sure.
So you
I'm
get
never,
excited.
You said something about the reward. Okay, I have this thing going with my grandkids where they get these gold coins. That's what I call them. It's the dollar coin. I just tell them it's a gold coin. And
yeah.
It's worth more than a quarter, like four quarters. But anyway, like to pick up their toys and stuff when I'm at their house. I said, I will say something, okay, help mommy pick up all these toys. And remember, you're earning gold coins. And of course,
okay.
They're really quick and they're nice to everybody. They're picking
What's
up because they
when
want
you
that gold coin.
Coin.
Huh? What? I'm sorry.
Or when they say, I don't want a coin. I want $5. No, let me tell you how you can turn that around very easily.
Uh-huh.
And it still fits in with compliments. You can say to them, oh, what a mess we've made. Help grandma, help your mommy make this place look good. Let's see how quick we can do it. Who wants to set the timer? You're giving them a job to do. Now, when grandma leaves, she can say, thank you for making my day so fun here. Oh, guess what grandma found in her pocket? Oh, my goodness. I found some coins. Anybody want one? It has nothing to do with all the chores and being helpful. I want your kids to understand you're helpful to lots of people, and you don't always get something for it. But I also wanted to know, it's okay for grandma to spoil. It's okay. And to say, look what I found in my pockets. And another time you do it when you first walk in and say, oh, my goodness, my pockets have been weighted down all the way here. Oh, can you help me find what's in my pockets? And it's just a gleeful, happy time with them. Do you see how different that is?
Yeah.
Because mama
like
isn't always going to be able to pay them for chores and stuff. But grandma can
right.
be that. Hey, I remember my grandfather giving us a quarter, and that was, you know, in the early 50s and 60s, quarters for the movies and buy popcorn. We always remember he never put any conditions on it. He just gave them because he had money in his pockets, and it was just such a nice gift. My father-in-law always gave kids, went to the bank to get $2 bills, and all three of my kids saved all those $2 bills that Grandpa gave them because they were from Grandpa for nothing else than just because they're my wonderful grandchildren. Did he ever give my husband and me any $2 bills? No. But those were his grandkids, and he can do that. And you can you can come laden with gold coins. But don't
okay, I'll switch
say,
that around
Let's
then.
Do it together. You say, let's do it together. We can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And who wants to set the timer? It's getting the kids involved in the activity. And, let's play basketball with seeing who can get the toys in the basket, in the toy basket. You know, just having fun with them. As they get older, they need to understand that you're an important, responsible member of the family. We're counting on you to do chores. And, yes, you do get an allowance, but it has nothing to do with basic chores. You get an allowance for one reason. You need to learn to handle money. You need to learn to spend it, save it, and give to those who have less than you have. and it has no attachment to the regular chores. Now, an older child who wants to earn some money for something can shovel the walk as for the neighbor, and you might say, you know, he doesn't have any money. Oh, that's my mom. But you know what I'd like to do is give you a little extra for getting out there and doing something for somebody else. That's okay. Or you need the garage painted inside, whoever paints their garage on the inside. And he wants to earn some money, or she wants to earn some money. She can do it. You have a child who's babysitting the younger ones all the time and not just once in a while. Once in a while, they should be willing to do it just because. But if it's a chore, it's a job, you pay them that way. And then they learn when they are making their own money to add a fourth thing, to spend, save, and give to those who have less than they have. It's called long-term savings with your signature and theirs, so they don't haul off with their university money in the teen years when they get mad at you. So I'm glad you asked that question, Paulette, because it's so important. We fall into those kinds of things because they really scurried around. But you don't want a praise-dependent, reward-dependent kid. You want that little granddaughter when somebody says, don't eat lunch with the new girl, because I'm the popular one. Don't eat lunch with her. I want your daughter to say, that's mean, and go sit next to the new girl, which is a deeply caring thing to do. And praise-dependent kids don't tend to do that. They're in it for the reward of being in the popular crowd. So let's look at that. They need encouragement. They need feedback. Confidence is the first time, but you also can get excited when that three-year-old says, Grandma, will you wave bye-bye to my bowel movement? You get in there and wave bye-bye to that bowel movement with all the enthusiasm that you can. And the child says, do you like this? I say, do you like it? Because that's what matters, is do you like it? And talk to me about it. Tell me. I would have never known it was a dinosaur had they not told me that kind of thing. And so, yes, you can get excited about their excitement. And this five-year-old does make it down the street with the training wheels not touching. He's excited that he did it. You get excited about his excitement. But remember, stroke the deed, not the kid. Be very specific to the deed and let the child know what his or her actions have done for something or somebody. The next thing they need is in feedback is comments, good, solid instruction. We need, as parents and grandparents and anyone who's involved with these young people, we need to give them good instructions about how to add and subtract and do all that. But we also have to teach them about body health, eating well. We need to talk to them about how to care for wounds if they get a wound. We have to teach them about sexuality. We have to talk about their bodies and proper terms, how to have manners at somebody else's home, that you wait until the person at the head of the table starts eating at somebody else's home. You teach them those things, and it's smorgasbord to pick out just a little bit and know you can go back. But you have to teach kids that. They don't come by it naturally. They watch. So if you're having good manners at the table too, they'll pick up a lot of that. So we need good, solid instruction. The last is something we're so afraid to give kids in a praise-oriented culture, and that's constructive criticism. I don't say to kids, that's not right. I tend to say to them that, I don't say to kids, that's wrong. I was jumping ahead. That's wrong. I tend to say, that's not right. And the reason I say that is that's not right is bigger than right, wrong. And it also says you can fix it. When I was grading papers, I graded with a green pen. And I would say to the kid, you got all these right, but I gave you ones I knew you could get. So try it again and see if you can get those right instead of, yeah, you got those wrong. But also, if you say that's not right, when two girls make up a game only two can play, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not right if your intent was to exclude the new girl intentionally. So we need to give them constructive criticism. That's not right. I know you can fix it. But how you handle an A-plus when your child comes home will give them a clue if they can come home and tell you they failed a subject or they got in a fight on the playground or somebody's picking on them or, oh, my goodness, I went and joined in with a group of kids being mean and I don't feel good about it. You see, you want your children to be able to tell you about the good, the bad, and the ugly. So when your child comes home with an A+, you go, I'm so proud of you. You take after my side of the family. We're going to put this up on the refrigerator for the other side to look at. Chances of your child coming home with an error on a paper will be radically reduced. And you'll probably go to back to school night and find every paper in there that's not an A+ because they couldn't bring it home. You say, well, what am I going to say when my kid comes home with an A+? All I've ever said to any of my kids is talk to me about it, tell me about it. And you can use that in so many different situations. But your child comes home with an A+. One has struggled with spelling and got an A+. And you say, talk to me about it. She says, look, I got all the words right, even spelled February right, and the R's in a funny place. You get excited about their excitement. But another child says, oh, spelling's easy. I'm not going to get super excited about it. But I do say to that child, you have a phenomenal gift, and you need to find a way to use that gift. We have to help our young people learn to serve with the gifts that they have, that they're not just there to hoard or to get praise and accolades for. And so you might say to them, you know, you're old enough now to go to the senior center with us, and you can help them thank you notes. You can help people who have trouble seeing to open their cards and read them for them. I want children to know that they can serve other human beings with their gifts and talents instead of, oh, I'm so proud of you. And then they'll be afraid to take advanced training in high school because they might not get a good grade. So constructive criticism, you just say, that's not right. I know you can fix it. Let's get with it and try it again. Your 16-year-old comes home and has run the back end of the car into a post that was newly installed in the school, and he needs to pay for the damage. You say, okay, talk to me about it. Tell me about it now. Let's see what kind of plan you can come up with, because I know you can. Now, after
yeah, you know
done,
what? I like what this is what my father did. He would say, if you're struggling with something or you had a low grade in anything, he would sit you down and say, how can I help you? He wanted to know
yeah.
where the problem was. And I
yeah.
like that so much that even my junior high school years for gym was not good because all I would get is an F. Not because I wasn't athletic or anything. It's because today that same teacher probably would have went to jail. My dad asked me, why are you getting an F in gym? And I said, that's because the teacher wants you to be butt naked. She wants to see your body wet. Now that's illegal for them to do that. And wants you to
fall yeah.
around. And if you didn't do that, you're that's an F.
That.
Yeah,
yeah,
and I did
yeah.
the whole
yeah.
year.
And
my dad,
and your
when
whole,
I explained it
your
to
dad
him,
understood.
He understood, and because
yeah.
all my other grades were good. I said, I'm not going to be
yeah.
naked in front of that teacher.
yeah, and that's a wise choice.
To me, that was humiliating.
Actually,
huh?
Well, it is. It is, and there's something wrong there. But what you want
yeah.
to do is, you know, say, talk to me about it. Tell me what it is. That's a good line. You can say it any time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they come home, even as young adults, and they look sad and sad, talk to me about it. Tell me how this pandemic's gone for you. I know it's been a struggle. And talk to me. And my oldest called me when she was having our first grandchild, and I was so excited that she said, Mom, we're going to have a baby. And I said, I could have said to her, oh, I'm so excited not to just take care of your dog. Oh, I'm going to be your grandmother, blah, blah, blah. I'm glad I didn't. I use my old line. I say, talk to me about it, Anna. I want to hear where she was coming from with her pregnancy. I'm so glad
right.
I didn't. She says, Mom, I'm so sick. She had a horrific morning sickness. And now think about it. If I'd have gotten all excited, she would have told a friend about her morning sickness, not me. And I said, well, she said, how long does it last, Mom? And I said, well, for me, about 3.5 months, and then I felt much better. She calls me the fourth month, and she says, Mom, I feel wonderful. I said, well, enjoy the next three. And she's an accountant. She can add. She said, Mom, there's five. Enjoy the next three. There's 5 months. I said, like I said, enjoy the next three. Talk to me then. You know, but it's, you can use that line so often with your young people. even with your spouses, you know, talk to me about it. Or your mom who's getting on in years, talk to me about it. I wish people had talked to me about what old age was really like. My grandparents didn't live that long, you know, and I wouldn't have known. Somebody, but my mother lived to, God bless, 92, so I had that journey with her. But it's a matter of giving kids, instead of abundant praise and tangible goodies, when our presence is a reward, to be there for them and to give them compliments, comments, and constructive criticism. Now, what do we do about deep caring and discipline? Now, deep caring doesn't mean you like your kids. It's okay not to like your kids sometimes. It is, really. I often ask in an audience, how many of you have an adolescent? They raise. I say, I'll bet some of you don't like your adolescent. And some of them keep their hand well extended at that point. And others say, oh, no, it's his behavior. I say, no, you really don't like him. You don't want to go home tonight. And but you love them deeply. And if they were in trouble, you'd be there as fast as you could. Put your arm around them and say, we love you. You're in trouble. We know you can handle us. For our list of lawyers we think might take your case, good luck, buddy. But we're there for them. That's what caring deeply is. I tell students, you don't have to like every kid in this classroom, but you must honor their humanity, their dignity and worth as a human being. Martin Buber said it so beautifully, I am I and you are thou, and we have a common humanity. Archbishop Desmond Tutu, God bless him, who just died, a man of great joy and laughter. He said, we're interdependent, interconnected, and interrelated. And we need to teach our young people that that's true no matter our ages. We're all connected here. And we must treat the other human being as a thou. We have a long way in our country because there's been this element of dehumanization of groups of people, and that has got to stop. And so I start with the very young, that you must honor one another. You don't have liking, but you must treat him with dignity and regard as close caring. Deep caring is a must to relieve somebody else's suffering and wishing them well. Now, what about discipline? Oh, and we don't have a long time to cover discipline. Let me just tell you the difference between discipline and punishment. We often use those words as if they're synonymous. They are not. Punishment is adult-oriented, imposed from without. It arouses resentment. And basically teaches kids to respond with three F's, that is fear, fight, back, or flee, into themselves, afraid to make a mistake, or out the front of their adolescence. But discipline, if you go back to the Latin roots, means to give life.
Wait, say that again about punishment. I know you said it fast,
it's adult-oriented, it's opposed from without, okay. It arouses resentment, and basically teaches kids to respond with those three F's, fear, fight, back, or flee. Punishment is something you do to a child. Discipline is something you do with a child. The discipline with authority means to give life to a child's learning. And since we have a short time here, I have a very simple formula for mistakes, mischief, and mayhem, no matter what age the child is beyond age three. Mistakes, own it, fix it, learn from it, move on. Mischief, show them what they've done wrong. Give them ownership of the problem. Give them ways to solve it. Leave their dignity intact. Mayhem, and I include all forms of bullying in mayhem, but not all mayhem is bullying, vandalism, destroying somebody's property and the like. Mayhem, you take those four steps of discipline and you add three R's. It's called restorative practices, restitution, resolution, and reconciliation. In other words, you have to own and fix what you did. Figure out how you're going to keep it from happening again and heal with the person you've harmed. The example I like to use is you have a child who's sitting at your dining room table scribbling with a ballpoint pen, and the ballpoint pen goes off the paper onto the desk and leaves a little indentation there. That's a mistake. They didn't mean to do it. Oops. And so you own it, fix it, learn from it, move on. Yeah, you put a bigger piece of paper down. You show them how putting a little bit of warm cloth, wet cloth, on that wood may raise it up enough that that indentation goes away, or you just learn to live with it. But you own it, you fix it, you own it, fix it, learn from it, and move on. So you put a big piece of paper down so that doesn't happen again, or you put a pad underneath where the kid is drawing with a pen. another child does tic-tac-toe on that same table. That's intentional. It's not me. It's just intentional. So that's mischief. The other child made a mistake. This kid created mischief. Another child carves a four-letter word into the table with another child's next name next to it. That's mayhem. Now, all three of those are dealt with differently. Whether it's a 16-year-old in lab class dropping the caustic beaker or with caustic material in it, or a 3-year-old breaking the glass because they insisted on carrying that glass to the table and crash it, went on the floor. You look at the 3-year-old and you say, now there's three kinds of families, brick wall, jellyfish, and backbone. Brick walls are very much into punishment. Jellyfish is into its alter ego rescuing the kid, but backbone helps them figure out how they can fix it. They have a mistake. Brick wall, you plastic kid, us where you're going to use plastic the next 30 years of your life. Get out of this kitchen right now. Which says to a kid, when you have a problem, you are a problem. And those are kids who will start to hide their problems from you. Jellyfish parent, oh, sweetheart, what was I thinking giving you a slippery glass? Oh, honey, I'm so sorry. Come on over here and have some chocolate milk while I clean up this mess. Which says, when you have a problem, it's somebody else's fault. And then I get that kid to school, and he says, it wasn't my fault. Worksheet wasn't dark enough. Teacher didn't give me enough time. The kid behind me was bugging me. Or the classic, you don't understand, teacher. He hit me back first. Backbone parent or teacher looks at that little one and says, you have a problem, go get me a bag. 3-year-olds can't pick up glass, but they can run and get a bag. You pick the glass up, they help mop the floor up. And then you say, which of these two glasses would you like to use today? And they're plastic and they look like glass. You know, but that little one knows that I made a mistake. I can fix it. I don't have to hide it, and I don't have to find somebody to blame it for. Now, but if it's mischief, our son broke the beaver bait jar at the Natural History Museum. Could have been worse. Could have been an irreplaceable dinosaur leg. We were very lucky, a very replaceable beaver bait jar. I was so pleased he was not punished. He wasn't paddled, which is still allowed in my state and 16 other states in this country, 17 other states in this country. He didn't get paddled. He didn't get sent to the principal's office, which could have been punishment depending on how the principal handled it. Didn't have to write 550 times, I will not break a beaver bait jar. And he didn't get banned from the field trip, all punishment. Instead, his teacher wisely said, Joe, you have a serious problem here. I know you can handle it. He had to write a letter to the Natural History Museum. He had to replace the beaver bait jar, which was a trip unto itself. And for those of you who don't know, beaver bait is female beaver urine. The kid will never break another beaver bait jar. And before he could go on the next field trip, he had to have all that done and have in writing how he would handle his hands and mouth creatively and constructively at the next field trip. He was shown what he'd done wrong, given ownership, given ways to solve it, left his dignity intact. Did he have fun? Yes. The Saturday morning, he got to go with the game warden. He got up early. He's so excited to go with the game warden. Then the game warden explained how he had to collect female beaver urine. His eyes got huge. He looked at me. He looked at his dad, who was smiling at this point. And he said to the game warden, I have to do that? And the game warden said, well, I didn't break the beaver bait jar. And just as an aside, Joseph's senior prom was held at the Natural History Museum. Now, you're probably saying, well, a little girl broke a glass, and in high school, a kid dropped a beaker with plastic material. What's the difference with Joe breaking the beaver bait jar? He was swinging his backpack with a buddy. The buddy hit him with his backpack as the woman's explaining dinosaur bones. So Joe took his backpack, laughing, swung it at the other boy. The boy ducked. Joe's strap extended on the backpack. And broke the beaver bait jar. That's mischief. Now, mayhem. All forms of bullying is mayhem. But you can have vandalism and the like that's not. The marking on that table with a four-letter word. The kid has to go and check out how it can get repaired, how to get it out of his money, his allowance, and see how that can take place. And then you have to get at the root of, okay, let's talk about restitution. First of all, you have to own and fix it. Resolution. Tell me how you're going to keep it from happening again. And they'll often say, well, I won't ever do that again. I said, I'll bet you won't. But I want you to tell me what you're going to do instead. And he's got to figure out how he can do things that are not destructive when he's angry with somebody, how to handle his anger and the like. And then to heal with the person you've harmed. This was grandma's antique table. Are you going to heal with mom, who's very upset, or dad is very upset? Well, is there something I can do for you, mom? Can I help put things in the album? And I know how much you love this table. Can I get a pad to go over it for a holiday? But you give them ways that they can recover from the damage that they have caused. Five-year-old bops a three-year-old over the head. We could spank him, which always marvel, don't you ever hit your brother anymore. And he just figured out if you're bigger, you can hit, which is exactly what he's done. He found somebody smaller to hit. You could also rescue him and say, oh, boy, stop fighting, stop fighting. This is not fighting. He bopped his brother over the head with a toy because the brother wouldn't share. So you say to him, whoa, you need to take some time to calm down and figure out how you're going to fix what you just did. Now, I'm not a real fan of time out to your room, 1, 2, 3, because it doesn't work that way. I had a mother say, but my timeout program works beautifully. He hits his sister, he goes and sits. I don't have to tell him. But he's still hitting his sister. She missed it. You know? No, you say, do you want to take time out in your rocker room or on my lap? And yes, with little ones, sometimes what a very out-of-control child needs, a very in-control adult to help calm them down. Because once they're calmed down, then their work starts. And I say rocker room or on my lap. I give them three choices. You give a strong-willed child two, they'll figure out which one they think you want them to do. They'll do the other just to spite you. But you give them three, there's a choice there. And then when he's calmed down, if he says, I'm done being mad, I say, not yet. Do you want to sit on my lap? You want to sit in the rocker? How do you need to calm down? Because you can't start fixing this until you're calm. And then if he threw the toy across the room and broke it, he's got to go to his piggy bank and get his brother a new toy. And then what are you going to do for the harm you caused his head? Well, maybe he'll let me rub it. Well, maybe he will or maybe he won't. But you have to try. And then how are you going to keep it from happening again? He says, well, I won't ever hit him again. I said, well, that's good. That's what you won't do. I want you to tell me what you will do instead of hitting. How about offering two of your toys for one of his and understanding that no is a complete sentence? You say no. I mean, if your brother says no, then you got to go find something else to do. See, we have to teach our kids how to handle the harm they cause one another. And you use discipline, not punishment. Discipline, again, is doing something with a child, not to a child. And always our consequences need to be what the French term, répondez s'il vous plaît. Please respond. RSVP, reasonable, simple, valuable, and practical. If they fit all four of those, then it's probably discipline. If it doesn't, it's probably punishment. So there's so much in this 30-hour course. But I need you to understand that no matter how loving, kind, caring, consistent you are, no matter how firm you are, no matter how much you say what you mean what you say, do what you said you're going to do, no matter how much you've eliminated sarcasm, ridicule, embarrassment, you have structure around mealtime, at least one meal a day, celebrate with your children. And I know some of you are sitting there saying, woman, you don't understand. My adolescent doesn't like breakfast, crazy schedule. We never see it for supper. Fine. Tell her you'll join her at high school for lunch. She'll find a way to have breakfast with you, guaranteed. Chores, I want my kids to understand you're an important, responsible member of the family. We're counting on you to do chores. And yet, yes, you get an allowance for one reason, to learn to handle money. So you've gone through all that. And this evening,
I remember a mother at the high school where my kids went. Her son would not dress appropriately for school. So her solution to that was she came to the school in a robe and roller. He was so embarrassed. He dressed.
Well, let's talk about appropriate clothes
after that.
Humor,
and
but you know what
she said
mean?
In all
it's
his
humor.
Classes. I never forgot that. She said,
"A little bit
okay
of humor.
To dress inappropriate,
way.
I'll show him." He was so embarrassed.
Yeah. Well, join her for lunch if she won't have lunch with you, because she needs to understand we believe in family meals. Now, after all that's done, and you walk in tonight, and your kids are sleeping. It's easier when they're sleeping. I want you to look down at them and remind yourself there's one thing we cannot do, nor do we want to, and that's control our children's will. that spirit to be themselves apart from you and me. They are not ours to possess, control, manipulate, or even to make mind. What they are is what Kahil Gibran said they were, life longing for itself. They're gifts to us. Now, granted, some came in very unique packaging, but they're all a gift, and we have to treat them as a gift. We have to encourage them to become all they can become, not what we want them to become. That's so narrow-minded. You and I can't even begin to dream the dreams this next generation is going to dream or answer the questions that will be put to them. You want them to make wise choices every day, give them the opportunity to make lots of choices, including some unwise ones. Don't be out in front to rescue, over to punish, but stand behind them to discipline them and guide them and encourage them. And then after you've done all that, I have one more assignment for you. I want you to model all that. And the best way to do that I know of is I want you to take 1 half hour out of your day every day and give it to the only person who's going to spend the rest of your life with you, and that's you. And I know some of you are sitting there saying, woman, you don't understand. Laundry's piled this side, just piled this side. I just took an hour out to listen to you, and I've got a lot to get done tonight. You want me to give myself a half hour? You bet I do. Because let me tell you something. You don't give yourself a half hour, nobody else is going to give it to you. You must believe as a parent first that you're worth it before you can ever truly impress on your children that they're worth it. So run, pray, read a good book, sit, take a long bath. Don't eat a hunk of chocolate cake. You will regret that. But do something that says, I like me. And when you've done that, what you'll find is not that you're the perfect parent, not that you have the best behaved kids with the highest test scores in the state. No, you'll have something greater. You have the energy every day to know three things. I like myself. I can think for myself.
Yeah. Let me ask you a
and
question.
Even in parenting. Oh, let me finish that statement. Even in parenting,
okay,
there's no problem so great it can't be solved. Go ahead. Ask me a question.
Okay. If you have a situation where you don't have time to model it's in a situation where it's life or death, and you need that.
You interfere. You run. It's like
you have to correct
a child
it like
running out in the street. You
right.
do it right there.
Right.
Seatbelt.
And
you
mean,
know,
where
I
they're not going to repeat that again.
Yeah. Right. Right.
But I don't have time to train them to where it's going to be life and death.
Yes.
And
if it's life-threatening,
that.
If it's life-threatening, morally threatening, or unhealthy, you have to intervene. You don't say to the five-year-old, I told you not to run out in the street. See what happens? And you let them run in the street. You don't. You stop them. And I remember.
No, they
I
dead.
Three,
that's what happened.
Yeah. I had three kids in 3.5 years. My oldest was timid. My second one became a stunt woman, risk taker from get-go. She was literally a stunt woman in Hollywood. And I had a baby. And so I put the two girls on harnesses that attached to my belt. The oldest, because she just wanted to be close to mom. The youngest, so she wouldn't run out in the street. And I had a woman walk by, and she said, that's what we do to dogs. And I said, they don't run out in the street either then. You know, I was doing the best. We needed to get outside. But you know what? The one would have run in the street. And you don't say to a 16-year-old, go ahead and jump off the building. We'll discuss the consequences after you land. No, you pull them back. Give them a second chance at life. And you say things like, if you ever are drinking, do not drive. And if you ever do, you'll be on your bicycle till you're 18. You say those kinds of things and you mean it. Because it's life-threatening.
Yes. Yes.
And so, yes, you do intervene. Yes, you have to. Life-threatening, morally threatening, or unhealthy, you intervene. And you don't let them learn logical or natural consequences. You just don't. And then after you've done all that, you know, what we have to look at is remind ourselves that when we get old and this next generation starts making decisions for us and they start making decisions for the new generation they will create, we can trust them that the time and the energy we spent parenting our children was worth it. Because thanks to that time and energy, this generation is going to be truly capable of caring more deeply, sharing more generously, and helping more willingly, which are the antidotes to hating, hoarding, and harming, the three most virulent agents ripping apart the fabric of our humanity. We need to walk our talk and talk our walk and laugh a lot with our kids.
Well, thank you very much, Barbara. I know we're down to the minutes left, and
we really appreciate
giving, you know, valuable information for whether it's grandparents, aunties, or whoever. It's really been a blessing.
Thank you.
Barbara Coloroso will also be at the 23rd Annual Families and Fathers National Conference, March 8th through 11th. She's one of the presenters there. So if you like, you can always you can call Dr. James Rodriguez. His number is 424-225-1323. To be able to, they'll tell you how to register and all that type of thing. But
it's a great conference.
Just heard just a little bit of what takes place this coming March. But I really appreciate you, Barbara. You're a very valuable
person.
Thank you,
Paulette.
And you gave valuable information that will be with us. And I'm totally in agreement. You gave me a different perspective and some of the situations,
how
to handle them.
It's a real joy to talk with you.
Yes, so we'll be on again.
I'll be happy to.
I'm probably going to do some more things with some of the other presenters that may want to come on, just like you did, Barbara. And we'll continue to promote what you're doing. Barbara also has written, I believe it's 5 books. Anything from bullying to
one,
bully.
Two.
Name
one,
some of those
two.
Books. And
then
you can go on.
Basically, this material is in is Kids Are Worth It. That's
I have that book.
Most of this information.
A good book. Yes.
And the other one is The Bully, the Not-So-Innocent Bystander, which is about bullying as opposed to conflict.
So you can always go online and order her books. Okay.
And thank you, Paulette.
Well,
I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
You've been great.
This was great. Thank you.
Thank
and
you.
And we'll talk
Take
again.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh.